Okay, and now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening. We have Andy G. from Guadalupe.
Thank you. I'm Andy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Andy.
¿Cómo están? ¿Mabuti? I'm half Filipino. And but right, my, you know what's important for me to say? My name is Andres. You know, because a friend of mine, you know, just recently passed away, and I've known her all my life as Lynn, but it turns out her name is Madeline, so I couldn't find her obituary, and so if I die, you guys know my name, I'm Andres. Anyway, how was what happened and what it's like now? I grew up here in Santa Maria. I was born in the old Marian Hospital over there, the Sisters Hospital, I guess it was called over there on College. My dad was a farm worker. I grew up working in the lettuce fields. First time I tasted beer was with salt out in the lettuce fields, and I loved it. You know, it was hot, drinking beer. Dad was going, this is cool. As I got into grade school, I was drinking more beer. Me and a friend of mine, we used to, there was this little liquor store in Guadalupe called El Rey's Liquor. And he used to be able to sneak in there and put them right out the side right there. And we'd get some booze out of there. High school was crazy. You know, I was dabbling in drugs and alcohol. And that's how I almost killed myself. I took a whole bunch of Reds and was drinking Bacardi, and a girlfriend of mine at the time broke up with me, and all I was thinking about was me, you know, my heart, and took my dad's 12-gauge shotgun and tried to blow my head off. That's why my chin's kind of deformed, you know. The doctor told me that if my arms would have been about an inch longer, I would have succeeded, but all it did was just clip off my bottom of my chin and my upper teeth and bottom teeth, jaw and everything. So, but I survived. I don't know why I survived, you know. I was still drinking. I mean, I was definitely different than anybody else because I, you know what, I just hated my life. You know, I hated the way I looked. Even when I was a little kid, I burned my whole chest and my neck right here trying to cook for my nieces. And my shirt caught on fire, and I couldn't go to the swimming pool without keeping a t-shirt on. So I had all these things going on in my head, and alcohol seemed to be the elixir that allowed me to like myself again, you know. It helped me calm down and be me, you know. And as I got older, I started getting in trouble, drunk in publics, drunk drivings. I tallied up 5 DUIs and 3 drunken publics, and through that I had a couple of wives, you know, kids, and a child support that I ignored for like 10 years. I thought to myself that I was managing life. You know, if I could pay my bills, if I could do everything else and still be able to drink, life was manageable. You know, life was manageable. On my last DUI, I was at a promotion party at Camp San Luis Obispo. A friend of mine didn't want me to drive, and but I, bound and determined, man, I love to drive. I don't care what, you know, I'll drive. And he tried to disable the car, and I almost cut his fingers off by slamming the hood down. He was able to get a couple of spark plugs off, and here I was on Highway 1 driving southbound, you know. Cops got behind me, you know, pulled me over there by the Madonna Plaza, and you know, I thought to myself right then and there, you know, never again. I don't want to do this no more. I'm tired of this, you know. I'm tired of this life. You know, I kept on getting busted. I kept on losing wives, I got kids, you know, and I just life just sucked, you know. I knew I was going to jail again. When they cuffed me, there was something in my head that was just that little bit of that moment of clarity that told me, you know, you got to stop. I got to stop. I got to find some way to stop. And then I remember a friend of mine, she had a Volkswagen with all these little stickers, you know, that were AA stickers. One day at a time, keep it simple, stupid, the circle triangle. And I said, you know what, I was court ordered before to go to AA, and I'm going to go check them out. So I went to the 1600, well, actually, after I got out of jail, I called up the AA hotline. We had the AA hotline. And I talked to a guy named Paul, and he passed away already. And he convinced me to come into a meeting. He could talk. Boy, could this man talk. I don't know if you guys know Paul, but remember Paul. But he talked me into coming into a meeting. First meeting I came into was a podium participating meeting, you know, and the first person I saw was a guy that I used to be in the National Guard with named Chris, tall, lanky guy. He saw me walk in and he goes, "Andy, it's about time you got here. Yeah, I've been saving you a seat." And I'm like, "Oh, God," you know. And at the time, I couldn't see any humor in it. I couldn't look up at people, you know. I just came in. I wanted help. And when came time to get a chip, it was a Friday night podium participation, and they had chip. They still have chips on that. And I went up and got my newcomer chip, and I walked up, and that was a moment where, you know, it just was like clear to me that I was an alcoholic. You know, I am an alcoholic, Andy. I am an alcoholic. I got my chip, and I said, "My name is Andy. I am an alcoholic." You know, and I went and sat down and listened. I couldn't remember anything because I was all about me in my own head, you know. And so I kept coming to meetings, and I kept on listening to people's directions and guidance and stuff, and they were saying, follow directions, get a sponsor, read the book, study the book, work your steps. And it come to enough meetings, those things start to take meaning, you know. And I did. I kept on coming to meetings. And at the same time, I was going to this other place over at by the old Valley Community Hospital. It was some type of, I can't remember what it was called, but that's where I first met this guy named Dave Jones. And Dave kind of took me under his wing over there and kind of guided me to what to do at the AA meetings, you know, find a sponsor. I'll tell you who to get a sponsor, who to ask, you know. So, that, you know, going to those clinical meetings and going to the AA meetings, I was glad I was done over there, and I was just only going to AA meetings. I got me a sponsor. I got me a Scott, you know, wheelchair Scott, and he started working me with my steps. And first thing Dave told me to do is, you see a guy with a wheelchair over there, you give him a big hug and you tell him Dave Jones sent you. And that's what I did. And then he says, and then you ask him, will you be your sponsor? I said, all right. So I started following directions, is what I'm trying to get at. I started listening to people. And for some reason, it was clicking with me. You know, I was following directions. And and so we started working the steps together. Did my first. I definitely understood that. You know, my life was unmanageable. You know, and then I was working on my second. And when I got to my third, you know, I was just like just over 100 days sober. You know, and That was when I had just finished going to jail for the last DUI, and I came to a meeting right after jail, and I got to lead my very first meeting. I got to lead my very first meeting. I was, I am coming around in AA, you know? So I had to meet up with this girl because me and her had this class at Hancock, and I was going to try to catch up with what kind of homework to do. And when we met over at Pappy's, I think it was. Is that Pappy's? No, that's, what's the one right there by the freeway and Main Street? Denny's. We met over there at Denny's, and she goes, "Did your sister get a hold of you?" I go, "What?" She goes, "Your sister's been calling for you." I go, "No." She said she'll meet you at the hospital, and my younger sister was pregnant, you know, so I'm like going, "Oh, my sister's going to have a baby." You know, she's having her baby. So I said, "See ya." And I took off to the hospital, and in the emergency room, I saw my sister sitting there, and I go, "What are you doing here? I heard you were in the hospital." She goes, "I am here. Andy, it's Danielle." She shot herself. My daughter, 15 years old. All I could do is wait, pray. I was going crazy. I was literally going crazy. The doctor let me go up to another waiting room. He took me out of the waiting room, and he left me there by myself. And I was just like, I was like a caged animal. I didn't understand what was going on. I couldn't believe that was going on, that this was happening. And then all of a sudden, my family came in with him. And then he said she passed away, that they couldn't save her. I went crazy. I came to meetings. I shared. You guys let me cry. You guys let me mourn. You guys called me up. You guys showed me that you cared. And I kept coming back. I kept on coming back. Because no matter what, I didn't want to drink. I had made a decision. I did not want to drink no matter what. And you got to understand the way I was raised. You know, my family is a big family on my mom's side. And every funeral, we drink. You know, that's just par for the course. We drink. And I wanted the pain to go away. And I couldn't. I had to feel everything. I had to live with what was going on in my head. I'm going, how am I going to live? But because you guys cared, I stayed sober through it all. You know, that was the first miracle that I felt in AA, was that I got through that part of my life without actually going and getting a bottle and trying to make that hurt go away. That hole. Where it's just like this big, painful hole. You know, and oh my God. So I kept coming back. I worked, got with my sponsor. Everybody was so loving. So caring. I even got over there at the mortuary, you know, flowers that said anonymous, and I'm going, ha, I know who that is. Well, I don't know, but I did know, you know. That's why I say it, make sure people know your name. You know? This is crazy. We're too anonymous sometimes. We are. Through it all, you know, my son, his sister, was still living in Stockton. That's where I picked up my daughter, was in Stockton, you know, and she was living with me. And she had flunked eighth grade with me, and then so she passed eighth grade, so she was just barely a freshman when this all happened. And so I had to pick up my son, drop him off. He was on year-round school and driving the I-5, you know, going back and forth, you know, on the way back one time, I was just beside myself. I couldn't deal with the pain again. It comes like in surges, you know. It comes like in surges. And it hit me again while I was driving. I pulled into Santanilla, and I knew what to do. There was this little half a phone booth, you know, over there at the Chevron. And I stood inside there, and I prayed. And what's weird was that after I got in my car, I wanted to die again. And I saw two hitchhikers, and I picked up the grodiest looking dude that was there. I mean, this guy was cochino to the max. You know, I'm like, going, if anybody's going to do it, this guy will, you know. I picked him up, and I started go driving south. And we talked about prior service in the military. We talked about him driving or hitchhiking up to Washington. He got to San Francisco. He found out he had a liver disease. He was laid up in there for a couple of months, and now he was going home to his mom in Louisiana. He's hitchhiking back to his mom in Louisiana. And we never mentioned anything about drinking or AA. Nothing. We were talking about all this other stuff. It had to be something that because of his liver or something, you know, as I look at it in hindsight. I gave him a felt marker that I had in there, and I said, here, you make your signs as you go, you know, which direction you're going, you know, so that way people know where you're going. And then he got out and left, and as he was walking away, he goes, hey, just keep the plug in the jug, all right? And walked away. And I'm like going, what? What? I believe in angels. They're out there. And they will help us if we're open-minded and conscious of all of this. You know, this is a spiritual program. You have to be open-minded, honest, and willing. You know, I was all of those. I don't know why. I do know why. So that I could be up here today, I guess. You know, I've gone through a lot of stuff in sobriety. You know, that was real early in my sobriety, and I came through. And that's how come I haven't really stood up to want to speak anymore, because soon after that it started snowballing, you know, and I started getting like an ego trip, you know. My ego started creeping out of me because I was being asked to speak in Solvang and Lompoc and Paso and in a little place over there in Cambria in Morro Bay, and I'm like all over the place all of a sudden. And I'm like going, wow, this is too crazy. I can't do this no more, you know. I can't do this no more. So I kind of started taking a low profile. You know, I try to not to be so visible anymore, you know, and it worked. it worked, you know. Until Lynn found me. She called me up. I go, do you know how many years it's been since I spoke? I'm so grateful for this program. You know, the things that go through, you know, that you go through in life, if it wasn't for the strength that I picked up in Alcoholics Anonymous and the tools that I picked up in Alcoholics Anonymous and the friends that I picked up in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, if it wasn't for all of that, I would not be here. I would definitely not be here. See, because with my daughter, it turned out that it was her boyfriend that did something or another that just tipped her over the edge, you know. And then other people, oh man, I tell you, there's people with a belief that if you don't succeed at suicide, they take the next shot, your child or something like that. And I was told that a couple of times. Boy, I tell you, I just, it was God that helped me from not doing anything more than just look at them and just shake my head and just walk away. You know, I can't understand how people could be like that, but that's my life. I stayed sober through it. You know, I stayed sober through it. Working my steps with my sponsor was going through the fifth, you know, and talking with him. You know, I was in his bedroom, and boy, I tell you, I was honest. And he cracked me up. He goes, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah." He helped me make it fun, you know. He helped me make it fun to be able to share and just do things with him. You know, another miracle in you know, everything surrounds my early sobriety surrounds that the miracles, because, you know, I have to share those because there's hope in here. I went down to Long Beach. Well, initially, I went down to L.A. I took my son and his cousins down to Magic Mountain, and I wanted to see my sponsor down in I didn't know at the time, but he was down in Long Beach VA Hospital. I went to the one off of Wilshire, and they said no, if he's got a back injury, then he would probably be down in Long Beach. So they connected me with him on the phone, and I was able to talk directly to him, and I was able to tell him what I was going through again, and he says, "You know what we do?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "We pray for those people we have resentments against. You know, you just pray for them." So, you know, here I am, you know, driving the 405, getting up to Magic Mountain, you know, and get the 5, and I'm praying and crying in traffic, you know, and it's a crazy thing to do, but boy, I tell you, this program works. The next day, I get a letter that Mrs. Lopez, which is a teacher over at the grade school over there in Guadalupe, had a poem that one of her students had written about my daughter, and she wanted to see me. And I used to carry it with me, but it's all tattered now. And I have it at home taped up together, and I don't bring it out no more. But I used to read it, you know, when I'd share. And, but there was a message in that poem that told me she's waiting to see me later, you know. And I'm like, wow, you know. And what was so strange about it was that I had a, I don't know if you're familiar with the old houses that have the circuit breakers that are a switch with two fuses. Well, the back ceramic part of that thing just melted, and the whole back porch filled with smoke. And I had to find a guy to fix it. Somebody told me there was an electrician right down the street. So he was over there working, and that's when Mrs. Lopez was able to tell. It wasn't a note. It was her telling me that she had that. And it, if it wasn't for this thing burning up, going down over there to catch this electrician, I would have never saw Mrs. Lopez right next door to tell me that she had this poem that this little girl wrote about my daughter. You know? And all of a sudden, I start connecting the dots. You know, this is way spiritual. This program is very spiritual. It, again, you have to be open-minded, honest, and willing to hear these things. My sister saw it in me, and I didn't even see it in myself. And I was telling her about this stuff, and she goes, you're beginning to believe in God. And I said, yeah, right. I said, but these things, they just don't happen. They just don't happen. And I was believing in God. I still believe in God today. God is my higher power. Because without God, I'm nothing. And it's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I mentioned Lynn. She was married to my last sponsor, and he'd always get up, "My name's Bill Braddock, and I'm an alcoholic." You know, I don't know if any of you know him, but he's from Paso area. I was working over at Camp Roberts, and I was making meetings up in Northern California, well, Northern Santa Luis County, and I found out that there was a meeting in San Miguel, so I went inside there and found Bill and a few other gentlemen that I loved dearly forever. And they became my very good friends. And most of them have passed away already, just like around here. You know, a lot of my friends here passed away already. You know, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, in November of 95. My sobriety date is November 5th, 1995. Mm-hmm. And it hurts to lose people. You know, it when I lost my daughter, you know, I never thought it hurt like that again. It came close to, you know, when some of the ladies and some of the men that you get to know around, you know, in the meetings and stuff like that, you all become family. You know, you're all family. And then that was another thing, you know, it was at the same time, it was like when I was talking about staying low, you know, a lot of that part also helped me not feel the pain of being close to people and losing them again. You know, but I was just hiding, you know. I'm coming back. I'm hanging out with Dan over there at Sunday morning meetings, you know, and talking with that guy. You know, he's a good old guy. I've really, really appreciated. I am really, really grateful. I am that I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because it was, I wish I could give this to some of my other family, but I can't, you know, I can't. They have to figure it out themselves. I texted my sister and told her that I was going to an AA meeting and I was going to speak for a long time. She says, "What do I want to hear you for?" I'm like, okay. And she's, you know, that's just she just doesn't get it, though. One day she will, I hope. I pray. You know, when we pray for the alcoholic that still suffers. You know. I'm going to start rambling, so I think I'm going to stop. Don't shake your head no at me. but that's it for me, Lynn.
All right, thank you.